The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The U.S. has ordered a strike group of fighter jets and Navy warships to accelerate its deployment to the Middle East as the region braces for possible attacks from Iran. The U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin also declared the deployment of a guided missile submarine. Sky News Middle East correspondent Alistair Bunkle is in Israel. He joins me now. Alistair, good morning.
Good morning.
The reaction internationally to the targeting of a school where displaced Palestinians were enjoying a safe haven, as they thought, has, taken the international community into another round of condemnation of the IDF in Israel. What is being said in Israel about all of this?
Israel disputes the number of fatalities, says that it has been exaggerated by Hamas. It insists that they carried out reconnaissance and have precise intelligence before launching the attacks, and say that they use precision-guided missiles to hit Hamas and Islamic Jihad targets. So they dispute the fact that they are being accused of killing dozens of civilians. I have to say that the footage that we've received from our teams in Gaza does tell a different story. I mean, whether or not the number being quoted by Hamas of more than 100 dead is accurate, that is very hard to ascertain. But this strike, even if it was on a Hamas command center, as is being claimed, clearly had some considerable civilian damage as well.
It looks as if the IDF feels it can act with impunity. It doesn't matter what the international community says. They will do what they maintain militarily they have to do.
Well, their main backer is the United States, as everybody knows, both diplomatically and militarily. So if there is anybody who can rein in Israel's actions and have an influence on the way Israel conducts the war, then it is Washington. And I think, you know, to be fair to Washington, there have been moments when they have had some success in that. But I think a lot of people would look at the White House's concerns and condemnation about the attacks over the last few days and think, well, hang on a second. On the one hand, you are condemning attacks against civilian targets and the killing of civilians. But on the other hand, you are essentially arming Israel and protecting them in forums like the UN Security Council. And so the two don't square up. And I wouldn't say that the IDF think that they can act without consequence or with impunity. I mean, I know many people through my line of work who are in the IDF, and I can say honestly that they are very conscious of what they do. But there clearly has been multiple incidences over 10 and a half months where there has been huge loss of civilian life.
Now, the prospects for peace, Hamas, with now the military head becoming the political leader of Hamas, who is not likely to be able to go to any negotiations, their stance, a bit confusing maybe, but they want to go back and build on the last truce negotiations rather than start a new round.
Yeah, this is referring to a statement they released pretty late last night, which I have to say I think was slightly misinterpreted by some people. There were reports that Hamas said they were not going to, they were pulling out of the talks later this week that were due to happen on Thursday. That the statement didn't say that. What the statement said was that there was a ceasefire proposal put forward by President Biden, I think it was July the 2nd, that then the UN Security Council voted and approved. And Hamas are saying, that should be the template, if you like. That's, we are sort of in favor of that. Let's not kind of rip that up and start again. Let's use that as the basis for an agreement. And, there is some logic in that. The US are behind it. They put it together. We were told at the time that Israel was behind it. The UN Security Council is behind it. So Hamas effectively saying, let's go with that. But, this is all strategy ahead of those talks. Yeah. The rumours is that both sides, that is Israelis and Hamas, are looking for a deal. But both sides are going to be, let's be honest, they are going to be playing games to try and get what they want out of it between now and then.
Meantime, some response from Tehran because their sovereignty was greatly offended against by the Israeli attack in Tehran itself. Whatever they do will certainly complicate matters.
I can't see a way of them doing something that doesn't complicate matters. There's a lot of strong rumour around over the last 24 hours that something will happen today, tomorrow, and that potentially Hezbollah will lead some attacks and then Iran will follow a few hours later. From everything we're hearing, privately and publicly, they are determined to carry out attacks. They feel that their credibility has been undermined. They, particularly the Iranians, feel they're humiliated by the killing of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran. They feel that Israel is no longer deterred from attacking, particularly Iran, and they need to reestablish that deterrence. But how do they do that without escalating it? Because, again, we're also hearing that Hezbollah and Iran and Israel don't want an all-out war. So how do you respond, or how does Iran respond? How does Hezbollah respond without tipping it into all-out conflict, but at the same time achieving its aims? I mean, it's a real conundrum. We'll see whether or not they do something in the next 24, 48 hours. I think there's a logic in that, incidentally. I think, you know, they could be clearing the deck, settling the scores to get it out of the way so that Thursday's talks, ceasefire talks, can go ahead without that cloud hanging over it. But, you know, it's a risky move.
Alistair, thank you very much for your insight. Sky News Middle East correspondent Alistair Bunkle. Well, now I'm joined by Shane Leahy, a former Munster rugby player and co-founder of One for Humanity. That's the digit four, One for Humanity. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Thank you very much for joining us. You have ambitions to do something that might help things in Gaza. And before we talk about what you hope to, let's talk about what you have done in Ukraine.
Yeah, we've had significant success in bringing in hospital units into the far reaches of Ukraine, right up to the front lines, and also significant quantities of medicines donated by Heart to Heart International. So we've brought in 16 hospital units and tens of millions of medical aid into Ukraine by using business contacts and connections, specifically CMARC, which is a CRH company in Ukraine, to deliver those that aid to the front lines. We're hoping to replicate that in Gaza. We're working with the International Medical Corps, and we've ordered our first hospitainer unit, which is a self-contained operating theatre plus support rooms from Hospitainer, a Dutch company, for delivery into Gaza.
Now, the sound of it, hospitainer, it's obviously some sort of a medical unit which is contained within the confines of a shipping container.
Yeah, the operating theatre itself is within a 20-foot shipping container, but it has a full surgical capability within it, including all of the equipment that you would require to support a significant surgery. The International Medical Corps will be using that with staff existing on the ground to do up to 8 to 10 major surgeries on a daily basis. They have an existing field hospital within Gaza, and this will add additional capabilities to their present capability. So there is obviously significant devastation on the ground, with 95% of the population displaced and, you know, 40,000 killed and 92,000 injured, according to the WHO. So there's significant requirement for additional healthcare capabilities on the ground. And our aim is to put the first hospitainer in place with the International Medical Corps and then scale that up by providing up to 10 additional units so that we can effectively provide an Irish hospital within Gaza.
Now, the question is, how do you get it into Gaza?
And I guess that's where it's key for working with the International Medical Corps. They have multiple routes into Gaza. This is something we have been working on, and specifically Ross Kelly, who's a fellow Entrepreneur of the Year finalist to myself, has been working for many months in looking at the different routes into Gaza. And indeed, we've been talking to multiple hospitals within Gaza, including Al Ahli and the European Hospital, which regrettably, unfortunately, they've been closed or partially closed at different times. The International Medical Corps have an existing presence on the ground. They have moved in a field hospital already, and we have identified multiple air and sea routes into Gaza. So we're very confident of getting it in. It has a tried and tested route via International Medical Corps, And we have multiple, as I said, air routes and sea routes, so that in the event of one of them being not being available, that we will route it at the best possible way.
Now, what
obviously,
kind
it's
of,
a changing yeah, situation.
Sure, absolutely. What kind of supports does the unit need? I mean, obviously it needs power, oxygen supplies, water?
In relation to the oxygen supplies, the unit itself contains an oxygen concentrator. So effectively, if you were to move in oxygen tanks, they're highly flammable and hard to refill within Gaza. So what we're supplying as part of the hospitainer is an oxygen concentrator so that it can take the oxygen out of the air and concentrate it for medical use. In terms of power, there is solar panels in relation to it, but we have had a request from the International Medical Corps to add two additional generators to the unit. We are fundraising for them at the moment, and hopefully we will be able to add the two generators to go with the hospital unit as well. They are largely self-contained. They need to be connected up for water, but the idea of them being in a shipping container with the attached facilities to them, a scrub room and a recovery room, is that they require minimal support services on the ground so that they're fully self-contained.
So what kind of capability does the unit have? How many surgeries a day and the nature of such surgeries?
It's got the International Medical Corps say that they will be able to use the container to do an additional 8 to 10 surgeries a day. And those surgeries are anything from catastrophic injuries to abdominal surgeries. So it's got the full operating theatre capabilities. And the International Medical Corps have the surgeons and staff on the ground to be able to scale it up on that. So we would that it would start with 8 to 10 surgeries a day, and hopefully with the addition of more units, we'll be able to scale that up to many times that.
So how is all of this funded?
Through the business community, we are a volunteer organization. We pay all of our own expenses and costs. I am a former Entrepreneur of the Year finalist, and we have received some funding from that community, which has been very welcome and vital, particularly for Ukraine and for Gaza. We are speaking to multiple other institutions, including government and universities, about funding additional hospitainer units, but largely the first hospitainer will be funded by donations from the business community, primarily the Entrepreneur of the Year alumni.
Okay, and the cost of one of these units, now there's the cost of buying it in the Netherlands, then the cost of getting it there, which I'm sure adds significantly. So what is the cost of getting one up and running in Gaza?
Surprisingly, they're reasonable for what they deliver on it. The exact cost is $223,500 for the actual unit, but that's it fully equipped with the concentrators, etc., and all of the equipment required for the surgeries, including the post-op recovery and scrub room. To deliver it into Gaza, it depends on obviously the means of getting it in there, but it is a very substantial cost to airlift it in there. But thankfully, the International Medical Corps have partners that they work with existing that sponsor the delivery side of it. So from our perspective, each unit will cost $223,500. The generator capacity on top of that is about 80,000 for two generators, which we would hope to supply with this, but that can be added on at the last minute, I guess, in relation to it. But we would hope to move in up to 10 units. So it's obviously a substantial cost for the full lot. But as regards a single unit, it's $233,500.
And I presume they'll be designated with a red cross or a red crescent on the roof of these, so they don't attract the attention of the IDF.
Yeah, absolutely. We're a humanitarian organization looking to bring humanitarian relief to the general population. So it's not, we don't have a side in relation to it. We will be hoping to provide healthcare services to the community at large.
Shane, thank you very much for joining us on the line. That's Shane Leahy, former Munster rugby player, co-founder of One for Humanity.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.